the future. A relentless, desperate wasteland ravaged by nuclear war. With the destruction of the internet and search engines such as Google, accurate information about the past is traded like currency. Two brave travelers are commissioned with the dangerous task of going back through time to gather as much information as they can to find out about the late 20th and early 21st centuries in hopes that a future society may rebuild what was lost and avoid the horror of a smoldering radioactive planet. But there is a catch. The travelers' journey back across eons of time is a one-way trip, leaving them stranded in the past.
Wait, what?
There's no way to communicate their findings to the future other than burying reinforced time capsules in the ground.
Are you serious?
In the hopes that one day recordings such as these will be unearthed to provide a glimpse of the world that once was.
All right.
This is the mission of the crispy coated robots, and it must succeed. Hey, it's Jim.
Hey, it's Joseph.
Hey, it's George. trying to be Joseph.
Welcome to episode 197 of Crispy Coated Robots. That's right, 197 episodes in, and today excited about this. Fictional restaurants in movies is the first topic we're talking about. And in movies, if you want to hear us talk about fictional restaurants in TV, you'll have to listen to episode 222. So that's where we talk about that. So, but fictional restaurants in movies. And the second topic, I know Joseph and I, we didn't share our list before the show today, but we talked about how this was a struggle. What is the second topic, Joseph?
So the second topic, which is best rock guitar solos.
Yeah. And this was hard. This was painful.
This is episode 197. And this is something that you guys were promising back in the introduction of the entire series.
Well, we
you said you were going to talk about best guitar solos.
Back, ready to go back then. It's pretty easy for me. This clear cut on the solos for me, that the ones that really kind of cut through. I know there's a lot of them, but these are the classics.
Yeah, I do
need to put a disclaimer out there. Anybody that has an adverse reaction to progressive rock music by the band Yes, you might want to turn away from this episode. I'm just saying, there's going to be some Yes music happening here.
It's best solo. Are
we
going to
get some Gollum? Are we going to get some Gollum references here?
you just have to wait.
A lot
and
of trees.
See,
so. A lot of trees.
The floop de loops.
Let's
Jim
go ahead and move on to fictional restaurants. Joseph, what's your number five?
Okay. Basically, if I could go to this restaurant, I would love to go, but really it would be special if Kerry Russell would serve me some pie, because I'm talking about Joe's Pie Diner and Waitress. This is just where you go, and Kerry Russell is this cute little waitress, and she has a knack of making really good pies with the name of Baby Pie and Spanish Dancer Pie, and basically she gets inspired emotionally to make these pies. So if she's in a good mood, then she'll sort of make it with certain ingredients or whatever. It's a charming little movie that was actually turned into a Broadway play later on. But the place where she served all these wonderful pies is Joe's Pie Diner, and so that's my number five.
All right, very nice. George, what is your number five?
My number five, best joint in Illinois to get four fried chickens and a Coke, or if you want, dry white toasted bread. It is the So Food Cafe from the Blues Brothers movie. Jake and Elwood, they grabbed lunch there while they were getting the band back together. And the great guitar Murphy back behind the stove. Just don't tick off his wife, because Miss Murphy, she'll sing a song to you, played by Aretha Franklin there. But the Soul Food Cafe just might be one of the most delicious movie greasy spoon restaurants of all time.
All right. My number five is the almost deja vu for me, watching the movie Waiting from 2005 inside the restaurant Shenanigans, which was filmed in old Bennigan's exact layout of Bennigan's, including where the bathrooms are. And the back looked exactly the same, too. So I had a deja vu in that one. But the fact that they made it kind of Bennigan's-ish with Shenanigans was great. And they all had the same kind of menu with steaks and sandwiches. And we always had to do something very true to the movie. And this was written by our waiter named Rob McKittrick, where you actually had to make the dessert back there. Besides Death by Chocolate, you had to actually make the sundaes. I remember the scene where the waitress is so mad she has to make the sundaes and the whipped cream runs out and it's super busy out there. But Shenanigans, very close to Bennigan's in Waiting, is my number five.
Yeah, number I think we all know that that's what it was.
Definitely filmed in old Bennigan's for sure. Number five guitar solo for you, Joseph.
Okay, so let's talk about this a little bit because there's a lot of thought behind this.
Not
really. Tons of guitar solos out there, tons of great guitarists out there. But what is going to make my five list is a solo that actually adds to the song, like its own unique perspective. Like it's a different part of the song. Like you have a great song going on, and then the solo comes in. It's memorable and it adds to it. It doesn't distract because there's a lot of great solos that I feel like just sort of take over the song and then there's nothing there, right? So my number five comes from While My Guitar Gently Weeps by the Beatles, but played by Eric Clapton. Prince does a great cover, okay? He does a great cover of this and his version is legendary. You know, everyone's like, wow, it's really good. But really the original solo to the song is one that I feel like, you know, it's the subject of the song While My Guitar Gently Weeps. So it shows, you know, George Harrison's creativity with the theme and all that. But it's Eric Clapton's blues style that just really makes this song. It's one that stands alone. You hear a couple of notes and you know exactly what you're listening to.
Yeah, off the White Album, I don't even think it's credited, is it? I mean, we all know it's him.
Yeah,
but they don't even mention it. But this is on my honorable mention. So has a good chance. My number five, how you said it's makes the song better. Okay, this doesn't even have a song going on with it. It's the solo that shook the world. Eruption by Eddie Van Halen off of Van Halen 1978. Jim and I, we did a review of this album. If you want to hear us really just rant and rave about how fantastic this debut album from these four guys are. But this solo, it's a mix of fast legato hammer-ons that he was famous for and pull-offs and those pinched harmonics and whammy drives and the two-handed tapping. And he just plays it with such an abandon, just a joy. The first eight bars, let me say, kind of bluesy. And then he, for the next eight bars, he kind of is going to get a little music nerdy here. But for those of you that know what I'm talking about, he kind of goes into the minor pentatonic and then starts to add these chromatics. And then the final part, he's doing all that tapping stuff, but it's not always on the beat. So it makes it kind of tricky to go back in between the sextuplets, the thirds and the sixth. But masterpiece in 78, still great today. So Eruption by Eddie Van Halen, the great.
My number five comes from the Beatles, and it is actually George Harrison from the album Let It Be, the title track Let It Be. Now, there's three versions of this song. There is the single version, which has kind of a vibrato type solo that George Harrison is doing, kind of nothing special, just following the song. There's a version with Billy Preston playing a keyboard part on it. And my favorite is from the album version of Let It Be, where George Harrison really lets go and changed kind of the entire tone of the song with so it just kind of explodes because you have this kind of like kind of really soft song. And when he comes in, that's why I always love the album version. When I listen to it on the radio, I was always like, please be the album version. Please be the album version. Oh, crap. It's the single version with a little vibrato guitar thing. And then there's the Billy Preston. But this stands out so much. Yeah. The George Harrison's Let It Be LP version solo is my number five.
Nice.
It always sticks out.
Thanks, Paul. Paul. You know the single. Paul's like, we're doing this version.
Number four, Fake Restaurant for you, Joseph.
Okay, number four is Pizza Planet from Toy Story. This is where, you know, we find our little alien friends in the claw, with it. But this is obviously, Pizza Planet modeled after every Chuck E. Cheese type, kid place where the pizza's probably not that good, in all honesty, but you're not really there for the pizza. But nonetheless, it's a fun place that we've all been to. So Pizza Planet.
Have you been to the one at Disney World? They actually have one at Disney World.
They do. And it's nothing special. I think they serve the same pizza that they serve at all the other fast food areas. So I'll have to do a study. Maybe that'll be a special report. I'm going to go in January.
Is it as good? Okay. All right, nice. George, what is your number four?
On my honorable mention there, Joseph, Pizza Planet. But my number four, you can keep your big kahuna burger. I want that $5 milkshake from Jack Rabbit Slim's.
No, it's like $10 Pulp Fiction. Milkshake, was it?
I thought it was five.
It's $5 milkshake.
But it's a restaurant that Tom can look that up for us. It's a 1950s themed diner with Steve Buscemi as dressed up like Buddy Holly, I think. And who wouldn't want Marilyn Monroe to bring you a burger while you eat sitting in a kind of part of a convertible? But Jack Rabbit Slim's, my number four.
That's my number one, George.
Oh, nice.
Wow. That's my number one. But, so it is a $5. I actually have it in the research. It's a $5 milkshake.
Okay. Yeah, I thought it was $9. He really goes crazy over a $5 milkshake. You can't buy a milkshake today for under $5.
Oh, no. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's sort of the sign of the times, right? Because he makes such a big deal about it. And I'm like, I can go McDonald's and spend $5 on a milkshake.
All right. There you go. So you want to add anything, Joseph, since it's your number one?
No, I mean, it's sort of a cool establishment, rather than having a karaoke bar, they have a dance contest. Yeah. And this is what's so pivotal about this particular scene in this restaurant is the fact that John Travolta's dancing. And everyone was flipping out, that
Tarantino
he was,
got him to dance again.
So it's a great one. That's why it's my number one. Great.
Do you remember what he says going in there about the restaurant at the beginning?
I can't remember.
It's like a wax museum with a pulse.
Oh, nice!
But they actually have a good time and steal that trophy.
I love the convertible booths. I love that theme kind of thing. So speaking of Disney World, there is the drive-in in the Hollywood Studios. There's a drive-in theater, and they have those booths.
My number four is from Wayne's World. Where else could you get Ed O'Neill to be the grumpy owner of Stan Makita's Donuts, where all the action goes down in Wayne's World and in Wayne's World too? The donuts look good. This is kind of like the hangout. They have the big hockey player of Stan Makita on top of it. Now, I actually thought after watching it that it was a real place, but not actually a real place. But it seems like it kind of a cool place to hang out. So the donut shop, Stan Makita's Donuts, that's open 24 hours a day. Obviously, they go there after the club. Is from Wayne's World is my number four. On now to guitar solo, number four. Joseph, what do you got?
Taking up nearly two-thirds of the song. Okay, it's played in G minor pentatonic, and it is just a wailing song. I'm talking about 1984's Purple Rain by Prince.
My number two, yes, sir.
It is, if a solo could be epic, this is what they mean by that. It is just, again, it adds to the song. It brings it to another level because you sort of have this simple chord progression that is very gospel like, and rather than having a choir come in, to add the mood and all that, he does it with his solo. And boy, if anyone watched the 2007 Super Bowl, it was crazy because it was raining at the time.
Yeah.
And he's just wailing and you're just like, is this real? You know, like this is just this so crazy good. So there you go.
Every time I hear about this song now, I think about the fact that Prince actually called Jonathan Cain of Journey and asked to play the song because it sounded he thought it sounded too much like Faithfully. So it was, which is crazy. George, what is your number four?
Well, my number two on that Prince thing, I just want to add one thing to it. You know, the man was such a virtuoso and had so much speed and power. But what I love about that solo, it's not very busy at all. Mm-mm, he just left so much space between the notes. So I agree. That's my number two.
Super
my
fun
number
to play.
Four.
I mean, just it's super fun to play. My brother and I play it all the time, and it always brings down the house. Even you can actually, it's an easy solo. You can actually play on acoustic and make it sound really good. So it's our
people
closer.
Just love the song.
It's still our closer every time we play, and people love it. So Purple Rain is definitely a great one.
So here we go, guys. Starship Trooper. Okay. The music critics rated this song as the 36th best progressive rock song
of
all time.
ABBA?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I thought you said Super Trooper, Starship Trooper. Okay. Same thing.
Super Trooper. I know Jim is a big fan. Steve Howe does this spacey guitar build at the end. But what makes this great is, so the song is like 9.5 minutes long. Okay. At the 5.5 minute mark, there's a chord progression that's just three simple chords, and they play that for 3 minutes without any lyrics. And you're just waiting, agonizing, waiting for the solo. And then when you can't stand it anymore, it's just, you know, churning over and over. Steve Howe's guitar just explodes onto the landscape of this song. So that is my number four, Starship Trooper from the Yes album.
All right. My number four jazz legendary session player, Larry Carlton, calls this his claim to fame. He told this to Guitar World in 1981. I'm talking about his soaring solo on Steely Dan's Kid Charlemagne, which he considered one of the most memorable solos in the history of rock. And Larry Carlton played on Gaucho and Asia, and his best work, I think, definitely is on the on this album, which is Royal Scam, or it's one of the earlier ones, but definitely this is and Steely Dan's been known for being seriously picky about their guitar players, as we know from Asia and switching off guitar players for Peg. But Larry Carlton is all over this and hitting everything, every possible great note he possibly can on Kid Charlemagne. And it's just a soaring solo that kind of takes the jazz part of Steely Dan and then gives a little bit of rock. So he kind of pulls out all stops on this one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is on my honorable mention as well. This is a fantastic solo.
All right. So we are going now to fictional restaurants. Number three, what you got, Joseph?
You know, I fantasized about eating at this place while watching the movie, because it's like many movies about food. It just made me fall in love with the whole idea. And I would love to have a Cubano style sandwich from El Jefe food truck from Chef. Yes. Yes. This is just one of those things that, you know, watching it just made me the romance of how they made the food. And it looked absolutely delicious. You know, you could get the lobster paellas there, the handmade empanadas, stuff with shredded beef, you know, everything in the entire food, you know, and that's what it was like a love letter, you know, to making food and all that. But if there's a food truck, boy, I'd be there eating.
Joseph,
this.
Did you know that you were on the set of Chef? Did you know that?
No.
So here's the deal. You know, the scene where they're parked in Austin and either sitting on top of the food truck and Gary Clark Jr. is playing guitar.
Yeah.
He's at Guero's Taco Bar, where you sat and saw me.
Are you serious?
George play for South by Southwest. So we were
We
were on that very same stage. Of course, it looks more electric with Gary Clark Jr. on there in the back light of him, you know, going out to the whole Austin. But yeah, so you were actually sitting on the set of Chef.
Wow, man! I wish I had a Cubano sandwich while watching you and George play.
Except for the food truck out there wasn't as good, but I did see Pauly Shore that night. That was a whole benefit. Yeah,
Well, that made it worth it.
All right. What is your number three, George?
My number three, it is from a 2022 American comedy horror film, I guess. The restaurant is called The Hawthorne, and it is from the movie The Menu. And the movie is about a very exclusive restaurant. I don't want to eat at this restaurant, by the way, but they make the food look so pretty, Joseph. Yes. But it's a restaurant on this private island owned by this fictional celebrity chef. Ralph Fiennes, he is Chef Julian Slowick, I think. But it's very, the whole movie is very atmospheric and very claustrophobic. You don't know. We kind of went in, my wife and I watching it, not knowing a lot about what was going to happen. So it was just a lot of fun. It's this thriller that's kind of got a little social commentary, not too heavy, but just ridiculous. And the final dish that they make, Joseph, back me up, it's hilarious. By the time you get to that, it's just
with the s'mores. It is great.
Yeah, but
it's the commentary is on like how food can get away from the whole culinary experience. Yes. of that. It's just everything has to be symbolic and all that, and you're like, you can tell it's like George said, it's one of those things of like they make the food look like art, you know, because that's what it's supposed to be. It's more of an art artisanal kind of experience or whatever, but I'm just like, unlike my what I just offered there, it doesn't look like, man, yeah, that'll fill me up, that'll make me feel good. Yeah. It's more or less,
well,
like
what's so great, the final scene with the burger. Now, yes. I want to ask you, Joseph, is the burger meat tainted or not? What is your opinion on that?
Oh yeah, sort of like the thing. I think it's not. I think that she gets away with it, you know. Okay. I think there's something to that of, and this is funny, I'm not going to say any more about it because I'll do a callback on one of my next
okay
ones, so
okay, all right, but that's my number three, The Hawthorne, from the all movie right. The Menu. What do you got, Jim?
My number three is now Taqueria La Placida at 108 Cass Street in Woodstock, Illinois, which doubled as Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, and it was the Tip Top Cafe at one time, where Bill Murray meets every morning after the groundhog sighting. One morning where he throws caution to the wind, as Andy McDowell said, and eats pretty much everything. But he also times the plate drops later in the film. Once the time loop keeps on happening, he'd be like, drop, shh, you know, so he knows when everything's going to happen. I know that they're going to drop a tray, shh. But the Tip Top Diner looks like the food looked pretty good in there, too. And then, of course, you have Chris Elliott, that great look on his face when he walks in to see that table full of food that Bill Murray has. but it always looked good to me. It's an important part of the movie. Tip Top Diner from Groundhog's Day is my number three. So we are time now for the intermission. Let's see what Caitlin presents today for us here on the show, which will be spray painting a horse fence. All right. Sounds interesting.
Going to be riveting.
I don't know what a horse fence is.
Do you know what a fence is?
Yeah.
Do you know what a horse is?
Oh, okay. It's like a gate. A gated fence. Okay.
That's my guess. I don't know. Glad they told us it was a horse thing,
because I would have been like, what are they spray painting? I wouldn't have known.
I don't hear any horses. I guess they have them away from the...
I just gotta say, someone had a microphone and thought that this was worth recording.
Yeah, I guess so. The future needs to know about it, I guess.
It's got like that, or one of those dentist things that sucks the water out of your mouth.
Yeah, exactly.
How long is the fence?
Horse fences are pretty long, so we're in for the whole job.
Now you're an expert. What is a horse fence? Horse fences are pretty long.
Yeah.
All right. Number three, Carcela. What you got, Joseph?
If, you know, like I'm trying to pick things that just sort of changed everything, sort of like what George said about Eruption, of like the world changed and all that. I think that when you think of slide guitar, okay, you know someone's going to be requesting this at the end of every concert that's played, which is,
oh yes,
Freebird. You know, yes, you got to play Lynyrd Skynyrd's Freebird. But it's not just the, it's just not the slide guitar itself. Again, this is iconic. I mean, when you hear it, it's like, it's as memorable as any of the lyrics, you know, with it. It's a guitar solo that is like just one main hook.
So are you talking about the actual version or the live version that goes on from like for 16
years? I'm talking about the live version that they just extend for 1,000 years. You know, they just play
still,
forever.
Still not long enough.
It's still not long enough. People are still asking for it, you know. It's like, boy, when they start up this, every air guitarist is just gesturing like crazy. You know,
well, you know, Joseph, when I play solo, people will ask me for this song. I'm like, go sit down. You can play this on the keyboard.
Pretty simple.
You know,
simpler than you think.
I've had people ask me to play While My Guitar Gently Weeps on the piano. But I know Jim's brother has been asked to play Piano Man on the guitar. So people get it together. Yeah, this is great. This is the great Alan Collins on this one. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So George, there you... what is your number three?
My number three is going to, it was a landmark album for this group. It took twin guitar harmony to new heights. It is Hotel California by the Eagles. Okay. It is Don Felder and Joe Walsh, 1977, the title track. From Hotel California, the album. The solo begins at like 4.5 minutes in and just goes, and they start trading licks together as they do those harmonies. And then they kind of come together at about a minute later at 5:39. But it's if you break it down, if you really listen to it and kind of study it, they both play these arpeggios of every chord. But the harmony is created because one of the guitarists will start on a note lower down in the chord. For example, if they're playing B minor, one of them will play B, D, and F sharp, while the higher guitarist, higher playing guitarist, not higher guitarist, but they start on the F and then go to D and everything. Anyway, when it all comes together, it is perfection and just a great, great guitar solo. Hotel California by the Eagles, featuring Don Felder and Joe Walsh.
Now, this is another one, like when my brother and I play, we play this one, and I'm only one guitarist, but if you can mimic, get close to it and walk around with your wireless, you pretty much have the audience in your palm of your hand. So it's this and two of them imagine. On the list are like killers for our set. So
well, that's funny because that's my number two. Hotel California is my number two. So
it makes it.
Yeah, and it's the fifths. It's the harmonizing of the fifths. Yeah. You know, circle of fifths, people.
Now,
if
I love
you're a
playing
musician,
it,
but, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You know,
but when I'm playing it, I love playing it. But I kind of agree with Jeff Bridges and Lebowski a little bit. I hate the Eagles, man. And that's funny. It's funny, we played it at this place called Fortress Beer Works, and this guy, John, who owns it, he loves us, but he's like, we played it one night, he's like, hey, man, I love every song you do. I just hate the Eagles, man.
Oh, wow. Was he quoting the dude, or was he serious?
Oh, no, it sounded like the dude. All right, so my number three is the great Terry Kath from Chicago on 25 or 6 to 4. Now Terry had a tragic accident. Now, if he didn't pass away in like 76 or 78 or wherever he passed away, it would Chicago would have went a different direction. He's been like said to be as good as Jimi Hendrix. Hendrix actually came up and complimented him. But the solo on 25 or 6-4 kind of shows us there where his talent was. Song so powerful today, it's still used in movies. Like yeah. I recently we saw The Flash. When they mm-hmm. see the Batman fighting scene, they could have used any kind of hip, electronic movie or electronic soundtrack. They use 25 or 6-4 when Terry Kath's soaring solo comes in. It's a combination, a little bit of wah-wah, a little bit of bending notes, a little bit of blues. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of the tip of the iceberg. If you listen to Chicago's first album, the song, it's pretty much a big, giant jam session with Terry Kath. One song, it's pretty much all him, 4 minutes. And then this, of course, is the band known for all the horns and for all the ballads. But the first two albums, very influential. This is my favorite solo from him. If you're interested more in Terry Kath, he has a whole album, a whole movie mm-hmm. about him. About his life. It's pretty interesting to see.
Yeah, so. from that movie, this is an honorable mention for me. I really wanted to put it on the list, with it, because it is one of those solos. He does a lot of stuff, but in that particular documentary that you're talking about, Jim, it does sort of go into of like the reason why people don't know about Terry Kath as much as they should is because he was with Horn Band. And if he would have not, had the tragic ending that he did, he was planning to leave the band. He was ready to do solo stuff. And he was just, because he was not only, a great lead guitarist, he was the great singer. And they were much more bluesier. It's like this is all before the whole, second act of Chicago. That was, what's his name?
Peter Cetera.
Peter Cetera. Yeah. Yeah. Which is fine in its own right, but he
two had different bands. Too.
Two different bands.
Kath had a softer side too. He sang on Color My World. So, that's probably the softest Chicago song you get before they go into the jam part.
Right. Exactly.
Peter Gabriel leaving Genesis, the second incarnation or third, depending on how you want to look at it, of Genesis. It's great, but there's definitely a shift
so that's a good one, Jim.
This song one. I love that they wrote a song lyrically about not knowing what lyrics to put in over this great riff. When you look at the song, it's the lyrics are trying to figure out what we're going to sing about, and it's like almost 4 a.m. and we're burning up studio time. And, and I pointed that out to my daughter one time. She's like, she felt so betrayed. I'm like, it's genius. you don't know what to say. Sing about, I don't know what to say, this is a great, great entry, Jim. Thank you. All right.
So let's move on now to the fictional restaurants. Number two, what you got, Joseph?
Okay. So, this is, Gaston's from Ratatouille, before a lot of people will say, I need to go to the bistro La Ratatouille, which is the one that Remy ends up having all that, but I want to go to Gaston's. I want to go to the original, the Michelin 5-star, restaurant that Remy, comes into his fame with, I guess you could say. But anyways, this is great. They also have a Gaston's in Disney World as well. But I think I really want to try the Ratatouille. I want to see how that is, so there you go.
All right. Ratatouille. Hey. What you got, George, for number two?
Hang on. I'm working on
this. Oh, and my callback is that I feel like, what George was talking about with the Hawthorne and the burger is exactly what Ratatouille did with the dish Ratatouille. When you have the critic that eats it back to a simpler time,
Gotcha. Oh, yeah. That moment where he kind of takes him back to a little boy.
Mm-hmm.
All of that. Yeah.
All right. So, George, what was your number two?
I'm still trying to spell these things. Y'all are going to have to come up with
famous.
Y'all are going to have to come up with easier
rats.
Things to spell.
Sorry. Rats for Gaston. Sale. Rats for sale. Used in Ratatouille.
So, this is kind of a reach, but I just love the fact the audacity of what I'm about to talk about. In Coming to America, you have McDowell's. And it's a Eddie Murphy movie. Okay. But McDowell's, guys, it's nothing like McDonald's. Okay. So a Big Mick, M-I-C, a Big Mick has two all beef patties, special sauce, and lettuce, cheese, and pickles and onions. A lot like the Big Mac, but a Big Mac has no sesame seeds. So that's the big difference there. And instead of the golden arches, they have the golden arcs. And plus, you know, their employees wear berets, you know, so very Parisian. But I just love that it's this obvious McDonald's knockoff. And the owner, though, protests that, no, no, it's not the same at all. So I just love that gag. And so McDowell's in Coming to America.
All
Coming
right.
to America.
My number two is one of the greatest scenes of the 90s. The restaurant's called the Frosty Cream. The Frosty Cream boy is played by Jim Jarmusch, the director. And, of course, Carl Childers, just fresh out of jail, is ordering at the Frosty Cream with the famous line, "You got any biscuits in there?" We got Frosty Freezes and French fries. French fry potatoes. I reckon I have some of them.
Yep.
You want the small, the large? I have some of the biggins.
So, and then you have that one moment. Blade, some call it a Kaiser blade.
Yeah, one moment when Jim Jarmusch is kind of asking if it's it, and then Carl's just staring out, and he just kind of like trying to tucks his cap to get back into the little thing to kind of get away from Carl Childers for the moment. But the Frosty Cream with Sling Blade is my number two restaurant because they have French fry potatoes, some of the biggins. All right, so let's go on now to number two, guitar solo. Joseph, what do you got?
So how many have I given out already?
Three.
We're on number two. I think Hotel California, was that your number two?
Yeah, Purple Rain, Hotel California, what else did I pick?
Oh, so number two. That's your number two, Hotel California. All right, so George, what's your number two?
My number two is Joseph's pick, I think, or maybe it's your pick. Purple Rain. So I'm done with number two.
My number two, I had to get a David Gilmour solo, but as much as I do like the one everybody picks, Comfortably Numb All the Time, as much as I do like Another Brick in the Wall, I have to kind of go with something that really kind of it just kind of blew me away. And that was the acoustic song from Animals, Dogs, that goes into this kind of bombastic, complete, crazy guitar solo. I mean, it's the best of Gilmour from Dark Side of the Moon, but there's something new and kind of fresh about it every time I hear it. Just the chord he's bringing in at the beginning, and then all the solos that take place after that. Not much lyrics in Dogs, but a lot of great solos. It just beat out Shine On You Crazy Diamond. But Dogs is my David Gilmour entry for the greatest guitar solos of all time. It's 17 minutes long, so you're going to find a good solo in there for sure. So there you go.
I remember we were at rehearsal one day, Joseph, and we're just honking around, getting ready for the next piece. And Jim starts playing this. And I'm like, you know that song? You know, I because it's not easy work. And he started doing it, and I'm like, oh my gosh. Not that we would, you know, perform that live,
just the acoustic part at the beginning, none of the solo.
Yeah. Oh no, no. I was like, I kind of perked up, but yeah, that's a great one.
It's a good one, really good one. Yeah. So on now to number one, fake restaurant. Joseph, what do you got?
Jackrabbit Slim's.
All right, George, you're one, number one.
My number one, Tchotchkes, an Office Space from 1999.
Flair.
You gotta have more flair. 15 pieces minimum on that flair, to be exact. You know, Joseph, people can get a cheeseburger anywhere. They come to Tchotchkes for the atmosphere and the attitude. That's right. Okay. So flair's about fun. It's again, in my opinion, kind of another Bennigan's knockoff or mockery of it. And of course, she shows Jennifer Aniston shows the Flair finger.
That's think, right.
At one point. But Office Space, Tchotchkes, my number one.
Nice.
Okay. And I originally had for my number one Arnold's, but I found out it was just going to be movies from Happy Days. So in order to
tune
get
into episode 222, folks,
that I wanted to do Mel's Diner, but from American Graffiti, but they to kind of capture the same thing. But apparently Mel's Diner was already existing when they actually shot the American Graffiti, and it kind of grew after that. Oh. Into some. So I decided to go with, from Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, which translated to the TV show Alice, Mel's Diner, run by Vic Tayback in both.
That's right.
Yeah, Vic Tayback is in both the movie and in the TV show. He's kind of the only one, although Diane Lane did return to the TV show later in seasons to do reprise her role. But Mel's Diner, famous for Mel's Chili, is a little bit more, if you watch the Scorsese movie, is a little bit more chaotic than the actual diner of the TV and the TV show. But, you know, in order to kind of get the same feel as Arnold's, I'm going to go with Mel's Diner from Alice Doesn't Live Anymore, which is a big, big part of the movie because Alice is a waitress.
Yep.
Ellen Burstyn in the movie. Yeah. So number one guitar. I think we all have the number one same guitar solo of all time. We have to. I think we do.
No, because you just dissed mine. Number one is Comfortably Numb.
Ooh. Okay. Okay.
My number one is Comfortably Numb. I think that this is the quintessential guitar solo. And pretty much across the board, whenever they come out with lists like we do and all that, it's always either number one or number two. Everyone always says that. And it's basically Gilmore and Benz. I mean, that's the real sort of secret spice.
Why I think there's so many other better solos from him. I think it's a key that it's kind of, yeah, like you said, notes and bends. I think the time solo is better. I think Shine On Your Crazy Diamond is better.
But I don't know. It's just like I've seen Pink Floyd twice. And whenever I saw him do this, I got it, I guess. I don't know. Like, because I was sort of like you. I was like, yeah, you know, like what separates it? But there's something about it. I listened to it.
Did you learn to play this one?
I do. I actually I know how to play Hotel California, Purple Rain.
Wait. Is everything on your list something that you can play? Is that the secret here?
No, because I don't know. No, these are, you know what? I can play not all of it, but pretty darn close to 25 or 624. I got that one down. I don't
Amazing.
Know. The dogs.
You're doing a note for note, Joseph. I can fake everything probably but Eruption and Starship Trooper. I can fake everything on this list except for that and still get probably the best. I'm still getting the same response.
If you can play three chords, you can play half of Starship Trooper because as there's like 5 minutes you're just waiting for that solo to drop. But Jim when we play live, he knows he has the ability to know the memorable phrase of a thing, and people will come up. There have been other guitarists that have come up and said, man, you nailed that Journey solo, and then later Jim says to me, yeah, I just hit the key phrases and
I'm just not a note for note guy. And I've seen what's his name, Billy, talk about from Smashing Pumpkins in the Rush documentary, saying that he learned that one song all summer long. I was not that guy. I would get too impatient and get something kind of close. Similar
you get enough
to that.
of the phrases, yeah.
Yes, but you know, it's a great solo. I'll give you that, Joseph. I just don't think number one. I think George and I have the same number one.
No, I know.
Really?
No.
I can't believe you guys don't have this as number one.
This is like Rolling Stone. No, this is like Rolling Stone. I knew this list was going to be controversial because people are very passionate about it.
This song won the Juno Award for International Single of the Year and the BAFTA Best Original Song Written for a Film. It is another David Gilmour. It is another Brick in the Wall Part 2 from 1979. what I love about it is this is such a different kind of song for this psychedelic band. I love Floyd. Okay. The early stuff all the way back to metal, even some of Saucer Full of Secrets, but all the way back here, Bob Ezra and the producer gives them this straight up disco beat, because he loved, what Niles Rogers was doing with the Chick and, Chic, whatever they are. But this does feature all the stuff you love about Gilmore, his emotive string bends and that bluesy scales and that the, what they call palm muting, where he, you know, he kind of mutes part of it and the rhythms. And, there's a little bit of Jimi Hendrix in it, a little bit of Eddie Hazel and BB King, just a great, great solo. And I can sing every time this comes on, I sing it in the car. If it comes on and I'm listening to it, I sing note for note, this guitar solo. I can't do that with a lot of the other solos, but that's my number one. Jim, are we going to hear from Mr. Page here?
Yes, we are. You're talking about a song that kind of changes your whole idea of what the guitar can do. I mean, I know it's been overplayed and overused, but you get it's
Stairway Page from the Lemon Song, right?
Stairway to Heaven. Takes the song, like you said, Joseph, Criteria, it takes it to a whole other place. Went from this slow song, and then it has this part in the middle, and then it does this thing, and then when it comes in, it's like no other solo you've ever heard before. I mean, this is one of the greatest rock songs.
Is this from
Led Zeppelin? I do like the version they did, though. They did a cover version with a bunch of people from Toto a long time back in the day, and then Mary J. Blige did a cover version also. But Led Zeppelin's version and Jimmy Page. This is the greatest solo of all time, for what's given in the time frame, the things that he does, and then matching Plant's vocal at the end on that last note. Yeah. It is, I thought this would be like a hands down unanimous.
I think what happened is, I would say, in all honesty, I think Page, at least now, you know, later on in life and all that, I would say out of all the guitarists out there, I identify with Jimmy Page more than anyone. I just like his stuff. I think whenever I start playing music and all that, I tend to gravitate towards his style more than anyone else's. And I think what ended up happening is he ended up sort of competing against himself, because there's so many songs that he does that are really, A Fool in the Rain. I love that little jazz improvised kind of thing that he does there. He was often criticized for being a sloppy guitarist, but I sort of like it. I think it's just sort of a style, you know?
Yeah, like Black Dog kind of goes out of sync a little bit.
It does. It totally goes out of sync. It totally goes out of sync. You know, but he adds in an extra note that shouldn't be there, you know, with it. But look, I'm not going to deny it. I'm not going to say, oh no, it doesn't deserve to be there or anything like that. But I think that I'm just trying to explain why it wasn't my number one or why it didn't make my list. I think that there's just so much of his stuff. I mean, if you look at our list, we don't have freaking Jimi Hendrix on our list.
Yeah.
All on the Watchtower is an honorable mention for me.
Are we going to do honorable mentions? Yeah, because I'm dying here.
So honorable mention is All Around the Watchtower, BB King, Thrill Is Gone, and also Easy by the Commodores, one of the great.
Nice.
Yeah, nice little kind of rip of the guitar there. Yeah. So go ahead, Joseph.
Okay, so I did have 25 or 624 on there. I like Stevie Ray Vaughan's Little Wing more than Jimi Hendrix. I felt like his Little Wing was better, you know, so that's controversial. I have Voodoo Child reprise by Jimi Hendrix. I felt like that was the stronger of the true. I did have Eruption, like George had on there, because I felt like just the significance of it. But this is a personal one. You guys know how like big of a Rush fan I am. Yes. And what I love about Alex Lifeson is that his guitar solos were so erratic that I think that's why he's not considered to be the amongst the greats. It's because he was so out there. I think Andy Summers was sort of the same way, you know, where they just sort of have this erratic style of playing or whatever. But if you ask a musician, why is the most difficult song that that group has ever done, it has to be hands down Livia Strangiato. Yes. 9 minutes, 32 seconds, something like that. It's literally
Caress of Steel, right?
Hemispheres. Oh, okay. This is when they're doing their most challenging work and all that. it took me a while because I never knew what the song meant. And basically it translates loosely into the strange village. And it was Neil Peart's idea of, it was sort of an inside joke between him and Geddy Lee, because Axel Eisen had this habit of constantly like talking about the dreams he had. So this is basically Alex's dreams. Now, the reason why I say all this is because that particular song, okay, the solo that Lifeson does is amazing. It was it's a masterclass in how to use swells with using your volume knob on it that comes in there. And it sort of creates this dreamlike state and all that, but it's just a groove. I think the subtitle of it, George, if you can remember, is A Practice in Self-Indulgence or something, because it goes all over the place, ends up, you know, in this like 40s type big band bebop kind of thing, you know. And then
George is thinking in his mind, he's thinking, Joseph's speech right now is a practice in self-indulgence.
I'm getting excited about this, because this is one that I just learned how to play the solo on this one.
This is getting into Lady Elaine Fairchild territory.
I'm going to speak over nine
y'all,
minutes.
Y'all this. Y'all diss the Yes stuff, but we can, and I do love it. But you're right.
No,
I was
laughing at that. That was funny.
Fine, I'll stop.
I have, for one of my honorable mentions, I have the exact opposite of what you described, and it was number five on my list right up until showtime. It is When the World is Running Down, You Make the Best of What's Still Around.
That's a good one. Yeah.
It is the most punk solo of all time, because talking about Andy Summers, it is the I'm not sure how I can say this, the screw you of all guitar solos. He plays one note
for
16 bars. It's just, and it starts soft and it just gets louder and louder. He's kind of like, you know, the lion doesn't have to roar to show you that he's the king of the jungle. I love
him on Driven to Tears too. That was
so punk.
Driven to Tears was a good little solo for him. That was kind of just like out there. You know,
I think my the craziness is Born in the 50s.
Yeah.
That solo is just crazy, because it's screaming at you, but it's not like screaming at you in a melodic way. It's just chirping at you.
He has an album. If for those of you that are listening, really interested, he did an album with Robert Fripp. And if you just want to hear weird guitar, that is the album.
There you go.
So that was one of mine, Jimi Hendrix, All Along the Watchtower, Jim. I did mention, or honorable mention, Alan Collins for Freebird, While My Guitar Gently Weeps, the great Eric Clapton, and Larry Carlton from Steely Dan.
I did have two, and you guys would have been mad at me. I almost chose this for my David Gilmour, his solo on No More Lonely Nights from Paul McCartney. It's very underrated.
That's a good solo.
Very underrated, because it plays and then it comes back at the end. He does this kind of really kind of crazy
thing.
It's
kind of David Gilmour being David Gilmour. I mean, it's kind of like somebody said, hey, we need a David Gilmour type solo. And so McCartney just called up Gilmour, who they are friends. You can see all sorts of photos of them going to concerts together and stuff. But that is the quintessential Gilmour. It has all the stuff you want in it.
Yeah, all the great effects.
Do we want to do honorable mention for our restaurants?
I didn't have any. I know you guys can go ahead and go.
I didn't have any, because I knew I was going to do 9 minutes, a riff on Livia.
Okay. La Strategia.
Joseph, I have Pizza Planet. I have the Green Dragon from Lord of the Rings. Okay.
Oh, nice.
Don't worry about it, Jim. I have Cafe 80s from Back to the Future 2.
Oh, good one. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's a 80s theme. And one that I really wanted to put on here, but I don't think they serve food at this one. The Korova Milk Bar from A Clockwork Orange, where they have all this, you know, you drink opiate milk from a mannequin's nipple, you know, so all this synthetic drug stuff. But so which of these do we want to tackle first? We've got one match in restaurants and we've got two matches in the guitar solo stuff. Which are y'all prone to do
the guitar first, since we're a little bit ahead?
There is no apology other than I spent a really long time on La Villa Loco.
Live in La Vida Loco. Yes. we'll talk more.
Lady Elaine Fairchild called. She wants equal time.
That solo that she does on Hemisphere. So what we have that matches is Hotel California. That's Don Felder and Joe Walsh just doing all their harmonies and stuff. Purple Rain from Prince. Everybody knows that's a great solo. You know, it's the mark of a great song is when you can't mess it up by playing it. So every garage band in the world makes that song sound great. What we have to choose from: Stairway to Heaven from the mighty, mighty Led Zeppelin. Several David Gilmour's, Comfortably Numb, Dogs from the Animals album, Another Brick in the Wall Part 2, and then Chicago 25 or 6 to 4, Free Bird, Larry Carlton on Kid Charlemagne, Is There Gas in the Car? Matthew used to love playing that song. Is There Gas in the Car? Let It Be. We got a couple of Beatles here. Let It Be, George Harrison, the LP version, please.
Yes.
And then Eric Clapton on the Beatles, While My Guitar Gently Weeps. And then a couple of my selections, Eruption from Eddie Van Halen, from Van Halen 1. And Starship Trooper from the Yes album. And you just wait and wait and wait and wait for that solo. It might not even be a good solo. You're just so relieved that it finally lands after 3 minutes. But how do y'all want to do this, boys? I know we've got to put some Gilmour in there. There's no way we can. I
feel like
we all had a Gilmour.
Cannibalize himself. I'm going to say, I'm going to put in the 25 or 6 to 4.
Ignore the Gilmour question. Okay.
Right now. Yeah. Just because that's on my mind. And I'm like, you know what? Okay. That was
I
one
do like
that
all the Gilmour selections. I mean, there's really not a bad one in the bunch, but you know,
right.
I do like, I think he takes Another Brick in the Wall to another level. And you know, the thing about that solo, he is really aided by Richard Wright, the keyboardist, because so he's playing the same thing, which makes it kind of intensify. Is
Wright?
It's his climbing of the keyboard. Is kind of his notes in the background. You think Gilmour's getting more intense, but it's really Wright that's helping him out.
Richard Wright actually got fired by Roger Waters, and so his playing on that album, he's like a studio guy. Mm-hmm. And when they went on tour, he was the only one that made money. That tour was so expensive. But the way that his contract was, because he was basically a session player on the road, because Waters was so mad at him. And I don't remember what the skirmish was. Roger Waters, he's a typical artist, you know, very passionate and gets upset. But the only one that did not lose money on the Wall tour was Richard Wright, the keyboardist. So that's the day he became a hero for me.
I could go with that. I mean, let's do Another Brick in the Wall Part 2 then.
Okay. I'm surprised for all your talk about the Rush, super solo that you didn't.
I mean, the solo on Spirit of the Radio and everything he does on that song is amazing. Yeah.
Lifeson's a god for sure. They're talking about getting, those two guys are talking about getting together. I read an article this week.
Yeah. Now I don't know how I feel about it.
Will they play La Stratego, Stratego de Billy Goat?
Oh, yeah. La Villa Stratego Billy Goat. Yeah. They, I don't think they're going to call it Rush, which I don't care. They're going to, I think they're talking about doing it. You know, Lifeson was in another group, I think a female singer Just wasn't the same. All right, we need one more. This is going to be hard. We got Hotel California, Purple Rain, Another Brick in the Wall, 25 or 6 to 4.
Sticking by Stairway to Heaven is the greatest solo of all time, even though Matt's all maybe overplayed. But that should go
I could do any of these here, y'all. I know y'all aren't going to do yes. I know that
y'all. Larry Carlton's good because it has a jazz bend to it, too. So
I had Eruption on my honorable mention. And I know, like, it's a song of itself, but just the significance on how much it influenced a whole generation of guitar players,
and bad guitar players.
Yeah, but I mean, if you think about it, it's like you really didn't have anything coming new after Hendrix. Hendrix like revolutionized everything, yeah. Right? Yeah. And then Eddie Van Halen, like who can you name after that that's had such an impact?
Yeah, it created a lot of dudes too. We played at this place called Jones Plaza, and there was a dude that's a heavy metal fan, and we were kind of more like REM in the 90s, and he was out there making the Eddie Van Halen hammer-on effect. He wanted me to do the hammer-on effect.
Who was the Spanish group that used to play?
The Basics.
Was it the Basics? Yeah. Because I remember watching you guys, and there was some guy that was like, yeah, he was like wanting to be the Mexican.
Oh, he was good. Artie passed away, but he was like Santana. He was awesome.
Yeah.
He played with us.
He was super talented.
Yeah, he played on a couple songs at our record release party. But that and Van Halen caused some people like wanting every guitarist to hammer on. I'm like, we're not that damn.
Scott George could play it. He can play that and some, and I want to note an omission here, the great Randy Rhoads, that he did, whether it's Crazy Train or any of that stuff.
I agree.
Another fantastic hammer on, but I couldn't do Eddie and Randy.
So are we doing Eddie?
I mean, this is tough. I mean, this is a Sophie's choice here. Because Jimmy Page loves so much of his
stuff. Agree. Like I said, he cannibalized himself. Sort of like what you say, Jim, about Comfortably Numb, you know, of Gilmore. I'm like, he has so many other good ones too. So that's where I'm sort of with Page on Stairway to Heaven.
As a kid listening for the first time, it was like, oh my God, what is this? Because it sounds like
first two albums.
It sounds like it's coming out of completely.
Let's just to the bane of every guitar store owner or employee. Let's put it in.
All right. I feel good. I can live with that. You know, all of these artists though. Every single one of them on this list with these selections, with the exception of probably the Yes album. Okay. I will admit this made people, when they heard these songs, it made them want to play guitar. And I think that's a good list when we're talking about the top rock guitar solos. Every single one of these, I can see some 11-year-old pimply faced boy going, oh my God, that's what I want to do is that make that. Make an instrument, make those sounds. Now, I went the way of the keyboard. I don't know what happened to me. There was already all these other guitarists, but I'm a frustrated guitarist at heart. So what we end up with, gang, Hotel California, Purple Rain, Another Brick in the Wall, Part 2, 25 or 6 to 4, and Jim?
Yes,
Stairway to Heaven. Fictional restaurants, the only match we have, Jack Rabbit Slim's from Pulp Fiction. We have to choose from Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, Mel's Diner, and Alice Doesn't Live Here. The Frosty Cream from Sling Blade. The Gaston, is that how you say it,
Joseph? Gaston.
Ratatouille, Tip Top Cafe, and Groundhog Day. El Jefe, the food truck. Wayne's World, Stan Mitka's Donuts. Pizza Planet, which was one of my honorable mentions. Shenanigans and Waiting. Joe's Pie Diner and Waitress, Tchotchkes and Office Space. We've got a Shenanigans or Tchotchkes. Some Bennigans-y thing has to make it in here. McDowell's and Coming to America, I honestly don't care if that makes it or not. I just love the gag that they just, we're not the same. The Hawthorne from the menu and the Soul Food Cafe from the Blues Brothers. Aretha Franklin getting on her song. So, guys, what's it going to be?
I think that we go with Shenanigans. Over so Chosky's, just because I think, you know, Jim number one relates to it more. Yeah. And he actually worked there.
I mean, Chosky's was the Flair thing at Chosky's. We had to get, I had to buy Flair and stuff like that. But yeah, the whole experience is Chosky's is a little bit more glamorous than Shenanigans. It's dirty and gritty. Yeah.
So and, I think we need to put the food truck. I'm going to throw a vote to the food
El
truck.
Jefe.
Yeah, because that is a different type of, not technically not a restaurant, but still.
Right. Well, I think just because it was such a crazy type restaurant experience that maybe the food I wouldn't enjoy it as much because I wouldn't appreciate it, but I still would want to go to it because I'm that kind of guy. I would like to put in the Hawthorne.
Oh, okay. Be careful what you eat there, Joseph.
I know.
Get the, may I make a recommendation? Get the burger.
Get the burger. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
One more. We got room for one more.
So it's a lot of good stuff. Yeah. McDowell's is a good one. That is a good one.
I like McDowell's.
Let's look at the type restaurants we have. We kind of have the diner thing going on with Jackrabbit Slim's rather fine, super pretentious dining with the Hawthorne. You're kind of middle of the road Bennigan's with Shenanigans. We got a food truck. What are we missing from?
I think either we need to do the Soul Food Cafe or Frosty Cream because both of those are like dives, you know. Okay. Well, I guess Alice doesn't live here anymore. Mel's Diner is a dive too.
All three of those. So.
I'm good with any of those.
Jim, what's a good diner out of those three?
I think it's because it's such a great.
Oh, the Tip Top Cafe too. Yeah,
I think the Frosty Cream and Sling Blade's probably
Frosty Cream. Because it is sort of like a Dairy Pride kind of thing. Dairy Queen, all those.
Yeah.
All right, there it is. Frosty Cream from Sling Blade with their taters. El Jefe, the food truck from Chef. Shenanigans from Waiting, hilarious. The Hawthorne from the menu, very odd. Recommend the movie, check it out. And then, of course, Jackrabbit Slim's from Pulp Fiction. So that is it, boys and girls, for episode 197. Three to go until 200. And what else have we got to say about this episode?
Please do your write-ins, you know, because just like every Rolling Stone list that they make, people are going to completely yell at us for our selections.
I disagree with Jim. He said this was easy for him to do the rock solos. He's a guitarist, so, you know, maybe that's why. But for me, I tossed and turned all night, boys, trying to, you know, make sure the future had an adequate representation of rock guitar and just the best of the best of the best. So
we've got a good sample there.
I think all so. Right. I think we can live with this. So
let's go ahead and shoot this thing up and dig it in the ground and then we'll wrap it on up.
Woo! 197.
Yes.
Okay.
CrispyCodeRobots.com for all our information. There you go.
All right. Remember, there's always tomorrow.
Diddle 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 diddle
diddle diddle. Joseph, can we open the capsule back up?
Seriously.
As we wind on down the road. There's always tomorrow. Is there?
And she's by a stairway.
Nice.